Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. As always, well, kind of, sort of, not always, but kind of in there. Greg's in there. He's pumping away, trying to help you in his own way. But anyway, here I am on March 8th, 2020. We're going to be looking at devotion. What does it mean? Are you a devoted person? What does that mean to even be devoted, to have some sense of devotion in your life? A lot of people have none. Well, what does that mean? We live off of a whole slew of things in this world, devotion not being one of them, but we live off a slew of fear, anger, hostility, personal hatred. We live off a slew of things, obsession, compulsion. Anyway, we'll talk about it in a moment, and hopefully I'll be able to help you. I want to thank my sponsors, yes, every single one of them, who makes this possible. This radio program is only here, and you are listening to it only because of sponsorship. People who are kind enough monthly and quarterly to make donations to allow me to be here, as well as the TV programs you see on the Aspire website at aspire.org, as well as all the things I do for hospice and our BATMO project for children. Everything we do to serve humankind in this way, it's very important. Kids need help. They need love. They need devotion. And they need to see that adults care about them in all ways, both in their biology and their mental and emotional, but their spiritual. It's all very important. So you make this possible. Please know I am humbly grateful for your kindness. I really am. Thank you. Let's look at the word devotion for this beautiful March day. If you look it up in the dictionary, it's about love, loyalty, enthusiasm for a person, activity, a cause, something like that. And then you have the word devotional used as worship, but I don't like any of those, frankly, and none of them really mean a great deal to me. Those words, those definitions are, to say the least, pedestrian. I don't think people know anymore what it means to be devoted. I really don't. I think a lot of people just miss it. So we're going to look at devotion today because we have three lovely questions that came in about a month ago at different periods. And I thought, gee, this would be perfect. And I want to thank those of you also who write in. If you ever want to write in and ask a question, you can email me at Greg@Aspire, aspire.org. And if you would, I'd like to know your name and where you listen from. And if you don't feel like doing either, you don't have to. And I won't say a word about who you are. Okay, but I might email your family and just to let them know what you're up to. First question comes from Carol. And Carol lives in, where is this? New Hampshire. That's a long way away from New Hampshire. I was surprised. She asked this question, what are you devoted to personally, Carol? Well, since we're getting personal, what am I devoted to? You have to understand what my idea of devotion is for my life. It may not be the same for you. I am dedicated, and the reason I am dedicated is not because I want to change the world or because I think there's something that needs to be done in this world that I think is absolutely essential for all people. I don't do that. I am dedicated for the simple fact of what happened to me when I had my awakening, my moment, my satori's, when I had the realization, whatever you want to call it, that this is all about love and that there is an intelligence, a throbbing, beautiful intelligence that is going on constantly in this lifetime, and that most of us, one way or another, just are missing it because we don't recognize it. So my devotion is a dedication to helping those who seek the way. And when I was a little boy, it all started there for me. And it went on and on and on all throughout my lifetime. I do not get caught up in the dogma of religion or loyalty to religious concepts or beliefs. When I was a little guy, I was looking at what the meaning of life was. I couldn't understand why I was here. It was something that absolutely consumed me as a child. Absolutely. So that's where my devotion goes. If you're looking for my what most people would say is my religious devotion, I don't have any. I think what you're alluding to as I talk about Buddha, Jesus, Lao Tzu, meditation, all of this, and it doesn't, most people are dedicated to one thing. Either you're a Christian or a Buddhist, and I don't do Christian or Buddhist. That's one of the reasons why I love Zen so much. It combines everything that is authentically true into a place where you can work on yourself. You can start to accentuate love in your life or accentuate the way you think or understand the way the mind operates. It can be very, very powerful. But most people want to belong to something they think is bigger than themselves, you know, and that's not where I come from. I operate inside a little, what do I want to say? It's not a philosophy, it's a way of life. That's what it is. And it's very disciplined. And I live in that discipline over and over. Greg, the human part of me, Carol, he doesn't always like this. And he acts out sometimes inside me. And, you know, he'll make me sick or he'll do some crazy thoughts into my mind, like, let's run, let's go, quit, let's do this, let's. And I don't even bother to listen to any of that anymore. So my devotion is a dedication to what I found was so deeply moving. There was a moment many, many years ago where something happened, and I can't explain to you in English or Indian or whatever. I can't explain to you in words, in syntax, in thoughts, what happened. All I can say is there was a revealing. And it's more than a revelation. It is a revealing. Something was revealed. And to tell you what that something is, I could not give you words for it. But I could see it gave me a sense of purpose, devotion to that moment, dedication to living in that moment and never letting it slip by as one more thing that you forget in this lifetime that was beautiful. Many people have beautiful things that happen to them, many beautiful things, and then they just forget them. They just kind of, it's gone. And they go back to their pedestrian mentality and their pedestrian living, and they don't do anything with that beautiful moment. Well, I'm not going to ever let that moment go. And it has grown and grown and grown into insight after insight after insight and kindness after kindness after kindness. It will make you awed if you do this, Carol. You have to have this deep spiritual pull to love, this pull to understand and then not understand everything. What happened, I could not understand. It was in meditation. And what occurred was beyond the precepts and concepts of Christianity or Buddhism or Zenism. It was beyond, there are no ways to tell you how this could happen. I'm not confined to anything. And if I am confined to a religion, a philosophy, a movement, or whatever, you miss, and I would miss, and I don't want to do that. So what I do with what I have is to live in the heart and the soul of my being, and to live there as a presence, not as a person. And that's how I sustain it. I am a presence. I am not a person. I live in this world in the form of a person, but basically, I am a presence. And I want you to understand, Carol, you are as well. You are a beautiful presence. This presence is not shackled by humanity, your humanity or mine. It is simply there. It is simply bright and beautiful. It is simply effervescent, and the only one missing it in our case is Carol and Greg, and they can't go there. They can't do that. And if you keep insisting that you're Carol, or I keep insisting that my Greg understand all this, the whole thing goes into the toilet. So don't do that. It's a way of life. Thank you for your kind question, Carol. I hope I was able to convey the meaning. Please forgive me. Namaste. Next question comes from Edwin. Edwin. Edwin from Los Angeles. Thank you, Edwin, for your very kind comments about Aspire. I deeply appreciate it. And thank you for remembering me on There Is a Way. I thought that was very sweet. Here is his question. Edwin asks, are your students devoted as you are? It would seem to me they would have to be to keep up with you. Edwin. Boy, Edwin, you open up a whole can of worms. No, my students aren't devoted at all. They don't get it at all. In their minds, they argue and fight with what I say. They don't see how they can live in this world and still be devoted to kindness, compassion, forgiveness, mercy. They don't see that. They're political, they're social, they're knuckleheads. And they have only the intent of accepting anything through the body and mind. They like what they can think. If they can't think it or they can't understand it, they won't spend any time pursuing what they can't think and they can't understand with their human mind. They're looking for a cure for their genetic dispositions. They live from DNA. Some of them are alcoholics, and some of them are not functioning, but still alcoholics. Some of them are potheads from time to time. Some of them are mean. Some of them are relatively polite. But that's just the human experience. Jesus didn't have very good disciples either. I'm not comparing myself to Jesus, but I'm just telling you. Gautama Buddha didn't either. You don't get students or devotees in this world. You usually don't get good ones. That's not what this world's about. I don't expect them to be perfect. I don't expect them to be total devotees. I really don't. Expect them to be exactly where they are and who they are, and it's my job to be devoted to a presence that is within and dedicated to helping them recognize their own. And I am totally, totally dedicated to that, and I have been for almost 50 years now. This has not changed. in me. And if you go back and you look at Aspire TV programs, you will see the message remains the same over and over and over again about love, about spiritual practice, about forgiveness, mercy, kindness, the whole thing. Nothing has changed. The teaching is the teaching is the teaching. How I deliver it might be a little different here and there, but basically the teaching is the same. So I don't migrate around. Students are difficult people. They really are. They every one of them has a glass ceiling. Every one of them lives in a minefield. The glass ceiling is what they can see they could be if they were to practice. But the minefield is the big problem because they have lived genetically. They have lived according to their emotionality. They have lived according to what is their basic impulse from their DNA. So they eat when they're not hungry. They sleep when they're not really tired. They need constant entertainment and stimulation. They need to believe that they're getting somewhere, going somewhere with the practice. They think that maybe the practice will cure them of whatever ails them, whatever they think ails them, whatever kind of problems they think they have. They're looking for an answer to their problems. Now, am I responsible for their misunderstanding? No. I work very diligently to give them insight, teachings. I work very hard. They would tell you that. And a lot of them feel rather guilty about that because they don't put as much effort into it as I do. But they're not devoted. They can't be. They haven't had that moment in their life of the presence of themselves as love. They can't do that. So I don't expect them to be anything more than the way they are. I help them, but they live in a cycle of futility. They're impulsive. I have, you know, some of them live off the internet. They live off YouTube and whatever is on YouTube, and they love getting into the negativity of it. I got one guy, he just lives off YouTube. He does. And it makes his mind crazy. And he likes getting into the intricacies of politics and socialism, and he likes labeling people. He likes, oh, this is a bad future we've got going on and everything. And I can't stop him from that. I'm on YouTube. He wouldn't bother to watch me, but he'll watch something he thinks is controversial and negative. I got a whole slew of those characters running around. Then you have the ones that are in denial and the ones that have their strong opinions about what they think is right and wrong and good and bad. It's an impossible situation that I find myself in. So I don't make it impossible. I continue on doing my practice. I continue on working with people. I work with children. I work with the people who are leaving their bodies at hospice. I do everything I can to make love possible. Everything I'm allowed to do, I do. And I like doing that because it's so beautiful. I love the essence of what lives in a person. I am very fundamentally in love with that. And I find people fascinating. I do not want them to be anything more than where they are. And if they come to me and they seek help, I do everything in my power to help them. That's just it, Taylor. Edwin, I just do what I do. Are my students as devoted as I am? They can't be. They're too, what do I want to say? Silly. They're too involved in their whims and their emotions. And in the bottom line, like the disciples, they would betray me in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. Because they betray themselves. So I always sit at the table at the Last Supper with them. I do. All the time. No matter what I'm doing, I'm sitting there at the Last Supper, and I know that they're going to deny me and betray me, and I understand why, and it's okay. It's what they do. They couldn't even watch and pray for an hour. They couldn't do it. So you don't do this work because you're trying to change people or make people better. You don't do authentic spiritual work to try to change the world or enlighten the world. You don't do it. You take it one person at a time. You see where they are, who they are, what they are. You don't condemn it. You just maintain your poise and your oneness. And if they see it, they see it. If they don't, they don't. But they have been exposed. And that's where dedication and devotion come together. They have been exposed to a love that is beyond the Gregory here, but just emulates through me. And they bask in that, and that's why they come, because there's a part of them that has recognition of that. And eventually, if they develop a soul, many things will happen. Edmund, thank you for your beautiful question. Please forgive me. Namaste. I hope that helped him. The last question comes from Raquel in Los Angeles. What good is devotion on a sinking ship of life, Raquel? She was talking about a devotion to meditation in her email. Well, whether that you think the ship is, you must be a millennial. You must think that, you know, we're all going to die here and there's no reason to live because the environment. You may well be right. I don't know. But I don't take a fatalistic point of view, Raquel. I just don't. If I die, you know, in a tsunami or due to starvation or whatever, and these would be terrible things for all of us, I want to die consciously. You're looking at this worldly life is the only life you have. There is another livingness within you. This livingness, as I call it, is the compassion for love and kindness, the insight to have beauty and sustain beauty in your life. This is an amazing thing, just an amazing thing that lives within us. So I want to die consciously. If in the last moment of my life, I'm clinging to a barge floating in the middle of the ocean that has now been Kansas, I would want to die knowing and understanding beyond Greg's intellect. So I look at my life as a privilege. Everything that I do is meaningful. Everything that I experience is substantial. Every person I meet, I am honored by. I am moved and deeply moved by. I don't take anything for granted. And I cry a lot. I do. Raquel, I cry a couple of times a day just letting out my frustration with old Greg and what he's doing inside, or the things I see in the world that are very painful and very ugly. I see them too, just like you do. And at times, my human heart aches for what I see. I don't want to be a part of it, but nevertheless, it is facing me, and I have to look at it from that point of view, and I do. I don't make it ugly. I make everything I do as beautiful as I can make it, and that's how I live my life. So, what good is devotion on a sinking ship of life? It's transcendence. Raquel, this is all about transcending. It is going from the human into the divine. It is going from what I think of as earthly life to eternal life, immortality. It is becoming one with the universe, one with the totality of this universe, which is love. So it has a lot to do with the meaning of the moment that I'm in with you right now. I am with you, even though my physical carcass isn't there. I am with you. I can sense you. I can feel you. You are a presence. The presence of you meets the presence in me, and we have a relationship even in this moment. And that, my darling, is what I'm dedicated and devoted to. And I hope that helps you. I'm out of here. I gotta go. Raquel, thank you. Please forgive me. Namaste. Well, there we are. Another weekend in the books. I hope it helped you in some way. I'll be back on the air next week. Have a beautiful weekend. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.